I don't think oil's trading on fundamentals anymore. Like you look at even just the price action today, it's Monday, like goes from 72, slams down to 70, and then straight up like $4. Like that's not, has nothing to do with what's going on and has nothing to do with the fundamentals. But at the end of the day, like you can't run an economy on paper barrels. And I think that's where a lot of the kind of shenanigans going on is with the paper market. Like you look at positioning with it being like basically at all time, like it's even worse than like the whole COVID sell off, which is, I think, absurd to me. But I think that's going to be an interesting place to look. And
Ben Kellerman, how are you?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me on. Definitely looking forward to our conversation. So
yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And you've popped up from time to time. I don't know if it's been in my YouTube feed or in my Twitter feed. And you had some, well, your Twitter feed, you had some very insightful things to say. And not directly to me, but you're posting and that sort of thing. And then you remind me a lot of a guy I had on from New Zealand. Where is he at? Yeah, he's out of New Zealand. Trader Ferg. Are you familiar with Trader Ferg?
Yep, I've had him on the podcast, my podcast, a couple times. Definitely have some overlap with our portfolios, but very sharp guy. But I think are interested in very similar things as far as commodities, energy, offshore oil, stuff like that. So there's definitely some overlap there. But I do like to throw bombs on Twitter every once in a while. I'm sure you've seen some of those, but I try to be a little more entertaining there. So,
yeah, well done. You remind me a lot of Trader Ferg, just your perspective, if you would. And that's where I really want to start out with. I'd like to chat about majority of this about oil, but let's start actually with coal. I've had Matt, are you familiar with Matt Warder?
Yep.
And Trader Ferg on Matt a couple of times in the past 6 months. What is your perspective on coal as of right now and your outlook on coal and what are you doing there?
Yeah, so I think it's going to be a very good place to be invested over the next 3-5 years, whatever you want to kind of put as your time horizon. I have been trimming to buy another position. So the China stimulus, my coal stocks are mocking me over the last couple of weeks, but it is what it is. It happens. But I'm still very bullish. I think stuff like Warrior Met Coal, AMR, Peabody, stuff like that, I think is going to be a pretty good place to hide out, depending on what happens with broader markets. I think the Aussie names are interesting. I do have questions on some of the royalty regime in for a couple of those companies. But I think it is interesting to see like the merger with Console and Arch. And I think we probably will get more mergers in the future. But I think overall, like you look at valuations, buybacks, and or dividends, and like a couple of these companies have big projects coming online. Like I think it's going to be a pretty good place to be to park your cash for, I'd say, at least 2 to 3 years.
Now, when you say park your cash, so, and you did that with in the context of, and this is an assumption, so I'm going to ask, I'm assuming you're anticipating a possible market sell-off then in the near short term?
I think it's definitely a possibility. Like valuations wise, I think they're ridiculous, but that obviously doesn't mean can't keep going up. I'm kind of starting to get more into the camp of the more like stimulative that like you see from the stimulation you see from the Fed and you see in some of these different areas, then you're just going to get that combined with the passive money flows. And it's kind of this feedback loop that is has nothing to do with valuing a company accurately, like Apple or Nvidia or whatever company you want to look at. Like they're not worth what they're trading at. But if you look at the size of the passive flows and how much of the market is just like piled into like SPY and VU and all these index products, it's like it's kind of this self-reinforcing cycle where I wouldn't be surprised to keep if it keeps going up, but it has nothing to do with the fundamentals. So like fundamentally, like I avoid it for, I think, good reason, but I can't say I'm bearish just because of some of the market dynamics that are going on right now.
Yeah, that's well said. I've been in that camp for a while, if you would. It's just really hard for me to see with all the money printing, and it's not just the Fed, it's really around the world. And now you brought up China. Just the amount of money printing that's been going on, it's just hard for me to see a deflationary pressure, if you would, in the market. I think we are seeing it in the economy, but in the market, it's hard for me to see a drastic sell-off more than 5 to 10%. Maybe we do get it, but, you know, we'll
yeah,
see.
I think it'll be interesting to watch. I think, like you said, like the people that are talking about, oh, deflation's imminent, it's going to be the end of the world. It's like, I don't know where you're seeing that. Like, you might see deflation in certain assets. Like, I think parts of real estate is pretty expensive. I think there's a fundamental reason that, like, S&P shouldn't be at all-time highs right now. But as far as, like, if you told me, hey, you get to choose own the S&P or own, like, 30-year long bonds, and you have to buy it, go to sleep for 5 years, and wake up, like, 10 times out of 10, I'm picking the S&P, right? So I think the, like, interest rates could go down here in the next, like, year or two, whatever it is. But as far as, like, buy and hold for, like, long-term treasuries, I think that's playing with fire. So it's definitely, I think those people are going to get run over if you are trying to hold a maturity. So,
yeah, and yeah, it really leads to the question, and it's a rhetorical question. I mean, who is buying long-term treasuries? I guess the Chinese, the Japanese, but.
Well, I think they're actually reducing their holdings. I'm sure they, insurance companies, pensions, some of the other institutions that kind of have to are buying. I think governments in Europe are buying. I know Tom Longo's gone into in detail there on some of the European governments. But as far as individual investors, like, I don't see, like, locking in, was it like 4% and change on a 10-year or TLT or whatever it is that appealing? So,
yeah, not totally. By the way, I had Tom on. It was about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Check out that talk. It was fantastic.
I've already listened to it, so.
Yeah, it was fantastic. He hit it out of the park. So let's go to oil here. And I want your answer. I have my own opinion, but I want your answer on this is, why is oil, with everything going on in the world? And I also read the inventory reports that come out every single week, and with West Texas crude, or what, West Texas, we're short, and oil continues to sell off. I would love to hear what your thesis is on all of that.
I think it's basically, like, I've kind of come to this conclusion more and more in recent months, but I don't think oil's trading on fundamentals anymore. Like, you look at even just the price action today, it's Monday, like, goes from 72, slams down to 70, and then straight up, like, $4. Like, that's nothing to do with what's going on, and it has nothing to do with the fundamentals. But at the end of the day, like, you can't run an economy on paper barrels. And I think that's where a lot of the kind of shenanigans going on is with the paper market. Like, you look at positioning with it being, like, basically at all time, like, it's even worse than, like, the whole COVID sell-off, which is, I think, absurd to me. But I think that's going to be an interesting place to look. And I mean, eventually that reverses, but I think you also have kind of the trend following the commodity trading advisor type funds, where it's like, their whole approach is, if price goes up, buy; if price goes down, sell. And so price has been going down for oil for a little over, what, a couple of years now. And so they've been selling oil. And I think, like you said, the fundamentals on, like, supply, demand, like, I think we're starting to see signs of the Permian's might be in trouble. And I can, like, I'd bet, especially if we stick around, like, 70, like, low 70s on oil, like, good luck growing the Permian in 2025, right? And if you're not growing, you're shrinking. So, I mean, all the fundamental things are lining up, and it's still just, market's giving it away. So that's kind of my view on it.
Yeah. Okay. So let's get specifically here. Do you think this has to do with the election here? Why we're getting, why oil is so weak in light of everything that's going on in the world?
I think that's probably part of it. I know people talk about it being capped or at least range bound until the election. I've heard a couple of people say that it's has to do with Europe and keeping a lid on inflation, because that'll, I mean, you look at inflation and how closely it tracks, I mean, with a bit of a lag, of course, how closely it tracks oil and gasoline prices and diesel. I mean, because that basically flows through to everything in the economy. But my kind of base case is that we'll be chopping around for a while and any rallies will kind of keep getting sold. And then sometime between now and early, mid-2025, I think it starts to rally pretty significantly. And eventually the trend followers are going to flip long. And that's an interesting place to be. So,
yeah. No, I would agree with you. And I've been one of those people, one of those traders or investors, I should say investors, that really got it handed to me the past, I would say 6 months or so. I'm just very, very surprised. But the only thing, and again, we don't know for sure, but the only thing I can really think of is two things. Is we got a very important election coming up. And that's conspiratorial, I get it, but I do believe that has something to do with it. And then just as you pointed out, just trend followers, big funds, really, when they're just hammering it, they just hammer something. When it's down, they just hammer it. It's interesting to note, too, when I see the news, it's like it all comes out at once. Goldman Sachs will put out a report about being bearish oil it can be any news organization or big bank will become out very bearish. Well, and they do it at the same time. It's almost coordinated. So I kind of get a laugh at that.
Well, you do have that. And then you also have like the news article last week from Financial Times, like London will know exactly what OPEC's going to do because they're going to bring back a whole bunch of supply. It's like, okay, like,
what?
If anyone knows what is going to happen in the Permian over the next couple of years, it's the people that have been pulling oil out of the ground for decades in the Middle East. And like you look at those headlines and that's the thing about algos. They don't trade fundamentals. It's like they see a headline, bam, and it's like a race. But to your point there, I think the other thing that's interesting, too, is like the banknotes on long gold, like short oil, this and that. Like, I think it's pretty interesting because even among the commodities investors or the people that are like, they can see the writing on the wall and see that commodities is going to be a good place to be over the next 5-10 years in general. Like even among that group, like you can't get people excited about oil versus like gold or the miners or some of those sectors. And like with the China stimulus, it's like basically every commodity is either ripping or grinding higher. Like you look at iron ore or like some of the industrial metals and some of these other things. And it's like basically coming out of having a big rally, to say the least. And then oil is just like, nope, like down a couple percent or like stuff going on in the Middle East, like Hezbollah's leader gets killed, like down a percent. Like it just doesn't matter. Like there's no link to reality anymore in oil markets, I think. So,
yeah, no, it's interesting. So that really raises the question then, how do you see, or how are you playing this, if you would, the energy markets? How are you starting to position yourself? Is it with the equity side, or are you buying futures, or what are you doing?
So my biggest position now is kind of a special situation, like deep value type deal, all rolled up in one. It's called Sable Offshore, and that's one that I've been selling a bunch of other stuff to buy. Basically, they have an oil field in federal waters off the coast of California. I know people are going to just automatically like ignore that right away. But I mean, it's $24 stock right now. And they're basically planning to ramp production. And by the end of 2025, their management's goal is to pay like $1 per share per quarter in dividends. So that's pretty interesting for a $24 stock. And from everything I've seen,
so do the math. That's over 20%, right?
Not quite 20%, but it's like 17, somewhere in there.
That's great.
And the thing is, like, if they're paying $1 per share per quarter, like that's a stock that's not priced at not priced below $50, I don't think.
No.
And the thing that's interesting is like with that asset, like they have basically three platforms in the water, and then online or the onshore infrastructure and pipeline capacity. And I think they're going to ramp production pretty quick. And since they settled with Santa Barbara County, like the stock went from, let's see, like it was in the teens, popped up into the 20s. Now we're sitting a bit below 25, but I think it's like they're sitting on an asset that was Exxon's best asset for decades in the U.S. And like when you hear management talk about it, like what they think they can do with it, I think there's a pretty interesting upside there where even if you run the math at like $70 oil and $3, $4 natural gas, because they actually get paid for natural gas because they're in California. I think that comes out to some pretty interesting outcomes. So it's, I think, a very asymmetric upside. You don't need oil to cooperate for that one to work. I think it's basically near term, you're going to get, I think, production announcement. I've seen several people saying it's like first week of October, which it's October 1st today. So that's, I think, imminent. And then they'll refinance the debt to Exxon. They'll have the warrants sorted out. It's a very interesting situation, but I think more and more people are going to start to figure that out and realize like, hey, this thing's cheap at 30. It's pretty cheap at 40. And I think there's a pretty good reason to own it when like insider ownership between the CEO and management and institutions is like 2/3 of the company. So like they stand to make billions of dollars if they execute like I think they will. So that's kind of one of my favorites. I also like offshore oil services. That's been, like you said, the last 6 months have been rough for those. But I think as far as the producer side, like I haven't seen much like Sable Offshore that really got me excited. So.
Got it. So it's, you're primarily playing the equities and not like the futures markets, if you would, correct?
Yeah, I think like that's not my area of expertise. I wouldn't be surprised to see oil go a good chunk higher in 25 and 26. But I think if you are expecting that and have some familiarity with some of these sectors, then like when you can layer that on top of like buying, say, like Valaris or Noble Energy, some of the offshore drillers that are trading at like 30% of replacement cost. And if you're also kind of have that thesis that the Permian's going to roll over and some of that, like that oil's got to come from somewhere. And that's, I think, in kind of offshore areas, then it looks like a pretty interesting place to be. So I think you're going to see day rates go a lot higher in coming years. I think you're going to see that the shipyards are going to be a bottleneck for building new ones, because I think shipyard capacity is down like 60% over the last decade. And when you start to run the math on like new build cost and what day rates have to do and all these different things, it kind of lines up to be like a pretty long bull market. So I think it's kind of taking the opposite side of the shale trade, but I would be surprised if we're still talking about like the Permian growing in 26, like where it's like, oh, we're producing 15 million barrels or whatever. Like they say, it's like, I mean, I've seen people argue that the stats are cooked already anyways, but as far as like real production growth out of the Permian, like I'm taking the other side of that bet. So
yeah, me too. I think it's rolling over as we speak. But that's, again, that's just my thesis here. So talk to me a little bit about the metals and the miners, if you would. What's your take on gold and silver, the precious metals? And do you have any positions in miners, or does anything look interesting in that sector?
Yeah, so I missed the boat earlier this year on the gold and silver miners. I wrote in my kind of beginning of the year post, like I expect gold to be 2,500 by year end, which was conservative, it looks like. But that was kind of a definite miss, where I should have been looking at like Agnico Eagle and some of the big, like some of those were a layup, where like Agnico in the 40s, and then, I mean, you can go down the list and look at some of the stuff. It's like
Newmont, I think it was Newmont
hit like 29 or something, and it bottomed out right around there. I was like,
was in March.
I think that is going to be a pretty good place to be invested in. Eventually, like the miners will get rewarded for higher gold price. And I mean, I think gold keeps going higher. Like I wouldn't be surprised to see 3,000 or more by the end of 25. I'd probably take the over on that, but, silver, I think I would say we're going to see all-time highs on silver by the end of 25. I think it's going to go. But the only mining position I have in the precious metals is like a small position in Impala Platinum. So that's one of the platinum miners. So you have to be fine with the South Africa risk and kind of the whole government shit show down there. But it's, I think platinum is going to play catch up in a big way in the next 3 to 5 years. And it's kind of more industrial, obviously, with the catalytic converter use. But I wouldn't be surprised to see like a big rally in platinum just because of supply and demand and kind of the current cost levels. I also have a little bit of physical metals as well, kind of across all three, but the only mining position I have is in Impala. So, but that's very small for the political risk.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to really my next question is, what's your process on evaluating risk in jurisdictions as well as company risk? What do you look for?
That's a good question. I think it's basically a case by case basis. But I think the big wins come where you kind of have a variant perspective on something. So like, I think that's where Sable is right now, for example, where like, hey, they've got a 50 to 70 year reserve life and they've got this massive asset and people just look at California oil and say, nope, no chance. And I think that's, gonna be the wrong take, but I think there's a lot of places in the commodity sector where like even the people that look at the US or Canada as low risk jurisdictions, I think that's, I'm not sure that's the case anymore. So I'm not saying that go out and buy the African miners and like find the best projects and do that. But I think we're kind of going into a world that is very chaotic and kind of all over the place for a lot of different things. And that obviously feeds through to commodities, but you got to have an eye on what the setup is for each company. And I think it's kind of a case by case basis thing.
Got it. Okay. Anything that is besides oil that is looking particularly attractive to you right now? I mean, like, and as I asked that question, I think of, I don't know what your position is on uranium, but uranium had a really nice sell off from the highs and Well, that's what I would say, not setting you up for uranium specifically, but is there anything that looks attractive or that you see attractive in the next 3 to 6 months that you're keeping an eye on?
Yeah, I think uranium is interesting. It kind of is, I mean, oil, I think, is the most political commodity, but I think uranium, it can be argued as a close second for obvious reasons as far as like nuclear weapons and whatnot. But the thing about uranium that has me a little bit hesitant is like what kind of happens with like all the Sprott Physical Trust and some of these other physical trusts that are based here in the West. If like a government comes in and says, hey, like that's a nice uranium you got there, we'd like that. But I mean,
they would never do that, right?
Yeah, that would never happen. But I mean, I think like if you just kind of have organic price discovery, I think uranium is going a lot higher. The miners, I'm not sure, are all that attractive. Like I've owned a little bit of the ETF in the past. As far as the setup moving forward, I think like that sector is going to get money flows. But as like the fundamental side, like I'm not sure some of the miners can be, I don't know if I can say they're attractively valued here. So, but with that said, like, I wouldn't be surprised to see a pretty significant spike in uranium. I think one of the sectors I've started to look at that is kind of interesting is like the ag sector, some of the fertilizers, some of the names in there. And this is like, I don't have much intelligence to say other than I think it's interesting. I think some of the ag commodities will be a pretty good place to be fishing over the next 3 to 6 months. I think the other place that's interesting is steel. I kind of, it's interesting to see what's the U.S. steel merger kind of in limbo right now with it being a political football. But there's a couple names there that I think are interesting if you're willing to look at outside the U.S. And I would say, like, I'm not as excited on natural gas as I am on something like oil, but I can understand all the fundamental reasons there that natural gas will be, and some of the equities in particular, will be a good place to be invested. So those are kind of on the watch list, not something that I'm investing in currently, but I think those are going to be an interesting place to look over the next 6 months.
Yeah, I would agree. I specifically with your eye on agriculture, and I think the way to play that is with fertilizer and the potash play, if you would. And there's some equities that I'm just looking at. I haven't nibbled yet, but I'm waiting until the new year for that, just because I'm a little afraid of what's going to happen short term between now and the election. I think we're going to see another black swan. I don't know what it is, but I think we're going to see another black swan.
So, well, I mean, you've got the port strike going on that's just starting today. You've got all this other stuff. Yeah. I mean, I think if we want to veer into the political a bit, I think Trump will win in a landslide if the vote's even fair. But I think it'll be interesting to watch the VP debate tonight. I'm curious to see how that goes. But I mean, I think a lot of people, especially after what's going on now with the hurricane there in Appalachia, like, I think there's going to be enough people in swing states that look at like the lack of government response and say, like, this is a month before the election. They're doing nothing for like our people. And we're still sending billions to Israel. We're still sending weapons to Ukraine. And it's like, if you kind of look at that, like those people in North Carolina or Tennessee, like they're not that far off from Pennsylvania or Ohio or other swing states. And I just have a hard time believing that there's going to be some mass turnout for Kamala, especially among men. I just don't see it. So that's kind of my view on the election. I think Trump gets in. We'll have to see if someone takes a third run at him. But I mean, anything's kind of on the table at this point. So,
yeah, you know, it is interesting. I Mark Faber, correct?
Yep.
Yep. And I had him on. It must have been about 2 weeks ago. And he had an interesting take that if Trump wins, and he's comes across as very apolitical, if you would. If Trump wins, it's going to be really, really inflationary. And he's not talking just because the economy is going to boom, but just because they're going to print a lot more money. That was his take.
Yeah. The thing is, I'm not sure how much different it's going to be if we get Kamala, which I mean, it's basically just the current regime extended, or if we get Trump. I'm not sure how different that is for energy policy and oil prices or inflation. Like, I think like it's nice to spin narratives on some of these things, but I just don't see, like, no matter who gets in office, I don't see any change for what's going on in the Permian. And I don't see many changes for like them slowing down government spending, right? So they might spend on different things, but as far as inflation, energy, like, I think we're probably in like a secular inflationary period, and it seems like kind of one of those lull periods right now when we might be coming out of it right now with rate cuts and China stimulus. But I think it's kind of where at the, I would say we're early stages of a commodities bull market. So that's kind of the way I'm positioned. And there's going to be certain commodities go in and out of favor. Like right now, gold's in favor, obviously, but I think that's why I find it also interesting, is if you can kind of find the stuff that's out of favor and kind of look at some of those opportunities at certain times, then that's where the potential for outsized returns comes. So,
yeah, no, I would agree. Ben, if people like your work or they're interested in following you, how do they do that?
Yeah, so I have a Substack, contrariancorner.com with 2 Ks. I also have YouTube where I post podcast interviews and stuff like that. And so I'll be writing about what's in my portfolio, companies I find interesting, some deep dive stuff like that. And then if you want me, the more political, like bomb throwing side, I do that on Twitter every once in a while. So if you look up Contrarian Corner there with 2 Ks as well, you'll find me there. So.
Excellent. Well, Ben, I want to thank you so much for your time. It's great to finally get to meet you over Zoom.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. We'll have to do it again sometime.
I'd love to anytime. All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, no problem.